Hi everyone, this is Amy Cooper. I'm the Program Director for the Conferences for Women, and I want to thank you all for taking the time to participate tonight. This is the Conference for Women's fourth of our monthly series of online events, and we're so happy to have so many of you join us tonight. Tonight's discussion is with New York Times bestselling author Gretchen Rubin. Gretchen is the author of several books, including the international bestseller The Happiness Project, which for those who haven't had a chance to read it is an account of the year she spent test driving strategies on how to be happier. Gretchen now reports on her daily adventures in the pursuit of happiness on her popular blog, also named The Happiness Project. We are so privileged to have Gretchen here tonight as she will share insider advice gleaned from a 9-month quest for contentment within her home on how you too can become a healthier and happier you. Touching on such topics as possessions, significant others, time, and family, Gretchen's insights will lead you on your own path to joy, ensuring that you never feel homesick again. So without further ado, I would like to open the line so that everyone here can welcome Gretchen Rubin. Hi, Gretchen.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
Thank you. And again, if you have just joined us, this is Amy Cooper, the Program Director for the Conference for Women, and we are about to start talking to Gretchen Rubin about her new book, Happier at Home. Gretchen, I mentioned this before, that The Happiness Project was the only self-help book I've ever read that I actually did something productive with. So many other books are a great read, but then it's hard to have takeaways that you can really accomplish and feel good about the changes you've made. And I used your first book as the reason I need more sleep and as an excuse as to why I don't write thank you notes for my 6-year-old's birthday party. And I would like to just back up for a moment. I know we're here to talk about your new book, but just touch on why you started this pursuit of happiness both outside and inside the home and what inspired you.
Well, you know, I had one of these moments in that you don't get that often in the tumult of everyday life when I was just looking out the window of a crowded bus and I thought, what do I want from life anyway? And I thought, I want to be happy. But I realized I didn't spend any time thinking about whether I was happy or how I could be happier. And in a flash, I thought, I should have a happiness project. I went out the next day and got a big stack of books from the library to try to figure out if I really did all the things that I ought to do, could I make myself happier? And I wanted to do it within my everyday schedule, you know, my ordinary routine. And I love reading about people's radical happiness projects, like Elizabeth Gilbert moving to Italy and India and Indonesia, or Thoreau moving to Walden Pond. But, you know, I have my 2 little kids and my work, and I could not, it's hard for me to leave for the weekend, let alone to go on some big adventure. And I'm not really an adventurous person anyway. So I really was looking for the very realistic, manageable things I could just do as part of my everyday routine. So that's really where I was focused for both books, which was how can I find more happiness really within my everyday life?
Great. Well, can you tell us about this new book and how it differs from The Happiness Project?
Well, I had this unusual experience. I was standing in my kitchen unloading the dishwasher, and my husband was watching golf in the next room, and my daughters were playing restaurant. And I was hit by this crazy wave of homesickness. I felt the way that I did when I went to summer camp for the first time. And it was such a puzzling feeling, because why would I be feeling homesick if I'm right in my own home? And I realized that it was kind of a prospective nostalgia, as if somehow I had gone 30 years into the future and was thinking back with yearning for what I have right now and right here. And the intensity of that feeling really got me to focus for the first time on the idea of home, because I've been doing all this research and writing and thinking about happiness, but I had never really thought about it through the lens of home. It quickly seemed clear to me that really home is the foundation for me and for a lot of people. And so many elements of a happy life come together in home, things like possessions and time and marriage and family and relationships and neighborhood and body. All these things are part of the experience of home. So I thought, oh my gosh, I've got to do another happiness project, but this time I'm really going to go very deeply into this crucial area of home.
That just skips my next question, which why you were going to focus on home rather than, say, work or relationships that have to do with happiness. So maybe we can hopefully hope for another book on that eventually.
It seemed to me that it was one of the most universal aspects of life. Some people have, work is different for everybody. People are in all different kinds of relationships, but just about everybody has a home. Single people, married people, retired people, college people, you know, empty nesters. You know, it's the very rare person who doesn't have home. And so I was, that was part of what made it really interesting to me, too, because it was so universal.
Great. Well, thank you. So you undertook this pursuit of happiness in the home for 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
And is there any magic to 9 months? How can our listeners gauge what is realistic for themselves as they undertake some of their own happiness and home projects?
Well, the reason that this was 9 months was because I decided it would track a school year. Because for me, and I've heard from a lot of people who feel the same way, September is the other January. And for a lot of people, I think it feels even more like a new start or a fresh beginning. You know, you have that sense of your new school supplies, your clean notebooks, your sharpened pencils, and this idea that you're starting afresh, and it's a new year in a way and a new opportunity to think about the way you want your life to go. And so I wanted to start in September. And you know, I think even if you don't, just the experience of having gone through school yourself, whether or not you have kids in school, that September still has that feeling to it. And then I thought, well, I'll go through the school year, because that is a year too. Just like the calendar year is a year, the school year is a year, because somehow June, July, and August feel different from September through May. And that just felt like the right amount of time to me to think about home.
And maybe it's less realistic for a lot of the working parents who read this book to actually accomplish anything in June, July, or August.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of need to take those months off.
Well, the kind of resolutions that I talk about, I don't think that you need to take. I mean, they're all really purposefully designed to be things that don't take a lot of time, energy, or money. They're really meant to be perfect for the kind of person who never has any free time. I mean, because that's what I found. I could never tell myself that I would do something in my free time because I don't have any free time. So everything that I do is something that you can do, like, you know, in the rush hour of life. Because I think one of the things that I fell into and that I had to be very careful about was not thinking like, oh, well, things will slow down after Christmas, or things will slow down in the summer, or things will slow down after we get, you know, it never did. I never had that feeling of like, okay, now I have all this open time. I kept thinking that it was coming, but then it never really did. So I realized that if something was important to me, I had to figure out how to deal with it in the midst of the chaos.
Right. Well, could you give us some examples of, or maybe your list of 10 super basic, very manageable things that people could do to start boosting their happiness at home?
Well, the first thing I would say, and it's so basic that you feel like it's almost laughable, but it just has to be said, is that you have to get enough sleep. I am just a sleep zealot. A lot of adults are chronically sleep deprived, and you know, whenever I talk to someone who says they feel overwhelmed or nothing's fun or they're listless or they can't make decisions, my first question is, what time do you get up in the morning and what time do you go to bed? Because I think a lot of people are just exhausted, and they've been exhausted for so long they don't even realize it. So, you know, your kids have a bedtime, give yourself a bedtime. I just feel like that is really an important basis for any kind of other resolutions that a person would try. Another kind of a resolution that I think is super fun that I've loved in my Happier at Home project is to embrace good smells. There's something about it's just a quick fix, and you just can enjoy that beautiful smell. And it's something that we often don't pay enough attention to in our everyday life, and yet it's right there, literally under your nose, waiting for you as a source of pleasure. And I just, now that I've dialed into that part of life and my part of experience, I just find it to be so delightful. Another one is, this is a funny one, but I've been surprised at how helpful it's been, is to read the manual. I realized that I was spending a lot of time being very frustrated by a lot of devices, you know, things like a toaster. I had a toaster that was way overly complex for a toaster. And what I've learned is that it turns out that when we expect a device to be simple and we can't get it to work, we blame ourselves. We don't hold the device. So I was frustrated. I couldn't really use a lot of these things. And But then when I was honest with myself, I realized the thing is I'm not reading the manual. I'm not taking the time that I should to become acquainted with how this video camera works or how this dishwasher works or how this toaster works. And even if I think it's ridiculous that I have to study a manual for 20 minutes to get a toaster to work, the fact is I did. And once I gave myself the time and the patience and really sat down with the directions and looked at the buttons on the video camera, I found that my level of irritation and impatience really dropped. I mean, even things as silly as like a lollipop. You know, my daughter couldn't get her lollipop open, and I was struggling and struggling and struggling. And then finally, I really looked at the lollipop, and sure enough, there was a little flap that if you lifted the little flap, the wrapper came right off. And instead, I was tugging and ripping and using my teeth instead of just taking a second to try to understand what was right in front of me. Another one that I was very interested to see that really a lot of people have responded to. I thought I was like the only person in the world who didn't know what to do with her digital photographs. I had just masses and masses of digital photographs, but I had not done anything with them. They were just on my computer. And that made me uneasy because I really wanted to have some kind of physical version of them. And of course, a physical photograph album could get burned up or get coffee spilled all over it, but somehow it seemed more secure than just having it be in my computer. And it also seemed more fun to, you know, you'd go look through a photo album in a way that you wouldn't necessarily sit with your children and flip through your photo albums or, you know, look from your, you know, years ago to some trip you took. But I didn't really know how to make it into photo albums, and just the prospect of it was so overwhelming that I couldn't face it. So it just got worse and worse and worse, and I felt more and more oppressed and anxious about it. So I made the resolution to suffer for 15 minutes, and I really recommend this for any huge task where you feel like you can't even begin because you're so scared of trying to figure out what to do. You know, sometimes with these really big tasks, you just have to allow yourself to chip away at it and make it so small that you think, well, I can stand anything for 15 minutes. And little by little, I learned what to do with the digital photo albums, which took some time, and then turned them into photo albums. And it's such a relief to me to have that dealt with. And one of the things about human nature is we tend to overestimate what we can do in a short term, like in an afternoon or a weekend. But we underestimate what we can get done if we do a little bit at a time consistently for a long period of time. And so by suffering for 15 minutes, it sounds so small as to be almost useless. Like, what are you going to get done in 15 minutes? Well, it turns out after 2 weeks, 15 minutes a day, I got pretty far. And then you see yourself making progress, and so then the anxiety that you feel starts to lift, or started to lift for me, and it became much easier. But I thought I was the only one who had this problem, but as I've been talking about Happier at Home, I met someone who is a professional photo organizer. That is her job. She helps people organize their photos, either digital or real. And I was talking to one woman about this, and she started crying in front of me. She was so worried and upset about her photographs and how she didn't know what to do with them, and they were so precious to her, and yet she was overwhelmed with trying to figure out what to do. So I was really reassured to find out that I wasn't the only one who was completely overwhelmed by this part of life.
Oh, I love that last one. Okay, so one of the things that struck me in your book is the theme that you discussed about thinking bigger. And I was wondering
yes.
if you could talk about a first step that you would encourage people to take to bring themselves towards thinking bigger.
Well, it's interesting that I hit on the idea of thinking bigger because I wanted to try this strategy that I'd read about, which is to pick, and a lot of my friends actually had done, where you pick a one-word theme for the year. So this is another way of kind of doing a happiness project, where you pick one word that somehow encapsulates what you want to get more of out of your life, and then think about, okay, well, how would you translate that into all the places where you feel like you want to have that come to pass? And so, and I heard great ones like generosity and flair and energy and, you know, just lots of really interesting one-word choices. And the interesting thing is I picked bigger, but my sister picked smaller. And I think they're both great themes. So for me, bigger meant have the bigger vision, you know, take the bigger risk, think big. I always worry that I'm thinking too small and that I should think big. And I wanted to push my boundaries more and really work to push my horizons back and to expect more from myself. One of the constant tensions within happiness is, on the one hand, you want to accept yourself, which is very important for happiness, but you also want to expect more from yourself, which is also very important to happiness. And so how to expect more from yourself within the confines of your own nature is something that is sometimes challenging to figure out. Is it, do I want to ask something of myself that's appropriate or not? And one of the things that I did, for example, was the resolution to start driving more. I grew up in Kansas City, Missouri, so I have been driving. I've had a driver's license forever, and I know how to drive. But since I lived in New York City, I didn't really have to drive very much at all, and I'd kind of gotten out of the habit of driving. And I'd always been a pretty fearful driver, and I'd gotten to the point where I was really too afraid to drive. And for years, I just didn't pay any attention to this. I just never drove. But finally, I thought, you know what? This is really, I'm starting to have bad dreams where, like, my husband is sick, but I can't take him to the hospital, or there's an emergency in my family and I can't get to them because I'm scared to drive. It's clearly weighing on my mind, even though I'm not conscious of it. And it's making my world smaller. And so I want to get bigger. I want to think big for myself. And one of the ways that I have to do that is I have to overcome this fear of driving that I've had, that I've allowed to develop in myself. And so I even went back and had driving lessons because I thought, this is going to make me feel more safe as a driver if I feel like I'm really reassured that I'm a good driver. And every time I would drive, my husband's like, you're a fine driver. Like, that's not the issue. The issue was really my fear of driving. And now I still really don't like to drive, but I can drive and I do drive. And I do feel like my life is bigger for having overcome that fear.
You can thank the torture inflicted on you by the DMV for part of that.
Yes, for exactly, right? The whole thing is so unpleasant that you just don't want to go through it.
Right, you've done it. Yeah. Now, what about simplicity? Because I know you talk about that a lot in your blogs. And is this something you address in Happier at Home as well?
It is, and simplicity is a really interesting subject. And I simplicity is complicated, it turns out, ironically. The thing about simplicity is, I think sometimes that we have an instinct to kind of think less is more, and I'd be happy if I got rid of everything. And I certainly am the kind of person who has the impulse to sort of want to throw everything away or to have nothing in a way that I feel like is almost impoverished. I feel like I have to fight the impulse to sort of throw out everything in the refrigerator. Or I think if I lived by myself and had no one else to answer for, I'd have a futon on the floor and, one poster leaning up against the wall. I overly simplify things in a way that is not rich and beautiful, but in a way that's just sort of blank and empty. And so I often have to remind myself that I want things to be simple, but I don't want them to be too simple. I don't want to take away too much. And so one of the things that I wanted to do with my possessions in Happier at Home was to really deepen my engagement with my possessions. And that meant both getting rid of things that I didn't use, didn't need, and didn't love, which is my test for whether I should keep something. Because if I don't need it, don't use it, don't love it, then it's time to throw it away, recycle it, or give it away. And then shine a spotlight on the things that really are precious to me. And what I found is that by meaningfully arranging things that are important to me and mindfully choosing mementos instead of just keeping everything, which was sort of my instinct, I really got much more pleasure and happiness out of my possessions. But then I also felt like I had more room. Things, that lightened feeling that you get when you get rid of stuff that you don't, that you feel like is weighing you down. And so I think simplicity is that combination of getting rid of the things that aren't important to you and really spending the time and the energy to focus on the things that really do embody important values for you.
Right, right. And it sounds like you are very good at prioritizing what your values are now from this book, and you've mentioned your 12 personal commandments. Would you mind sharing them and a few are the most important to you?
Yes, I have 12 personal commandments, and I really recommend this to anybody as an exercise if they're thinking about their own happiness project, because it's super fascinating to try to come up with your personal commandments. So these aren't just resolutions like sing in the morning or give warm greetings and farewells. These are like principles of life. And it took me months to come up with my personal commandments. And I would think the first is the most important, and it's important to anyone's happiness project, I think, which is be Gretchen. But of course, everybody has to substitute their own name. But this idea that you can build a happy life only on the foundation of your own nature, your own interests, your own values. And when your everyday life reflects your interests and your nature and your values, then it's you're much more likely to be happy. But if your life is actually a reflection of what other people want you to be doing or what you think you ought to like to do but don't actually like to do, or you're spending a lot of time on things that you actually believe are a waste of time but that you feel like you're required to do for some reason, then you're not going to feel that happy. You're going to feel overwhelmed. You're going to feel like you don't have any time for anything. And just that your life isn't what you want it to be. It doesn't embody your values. So to be Gretchen, you'd think, well, gosh, just to be yourself has got to be the easiest thing because you just hang out with yourself all day long. I mean, how do you not know yourself? And yet it's such a challenge. And Know Thyself was on the Temple of Apollo at Delphi. It's one of the most ancient happiness precepts. But to know yourself, not who you wish you were or you think you ought to be or what other people think you ought to be, but really what's true about you is very, very challenging. I think it's the task of a lifetime to really know yourself. And there's also something a little bit sad about it, because to know yourself and to accept yourself is to come to grips with all the things that you are not. And for me, for example, you know, I'm just not that into music at all. And I see that other people love it and get huge amounts of enjoyment from it. I understand that it's of tremendous cultural value. And I kept thinking, oh, if I just spent more time on it, if I learned more, if I listened to more music, I would learn to love it. And then I finally thought, you know what, be Gretchen. I've got a lot of things that I want to do that I don't have enough time for. Let me let go of this fantasy of one day learning to love music and just enjoy it to the degree that I enjoy it and let it go. And same thing with skiing or drinking wine or doing crossword puzzles or shopping or pets. I have a friend who said to me, well, Gretchen, you know me, I hate the outdoors. And I thought, I love that. Embrace it. Stay inside. You hate the outdoors. Okay, you know. So to be Gretchen is the first one. The most puzzling one, that people are always asking me what it means, and yet I find that so many people share this. I thought this was just me. One of my resolutions is to spend out. And I'm one of these people who has kind of a hoarding nature. So like if I get beautiful stationery, I don't want to use it. I want to save it, even though saving it is really wasting it. Or I used to get perfume and I would never wear it. Or I would get beautiful bath salts or linens or, you know, beautiful white T-shirts that were all fresh. And I would get the white T-shirts, and then I would leave them all nicely folded from the store on a shelf and use my old ratty stained T-shirts because I was saving the white T-shirts. And so spend out reminds me to put things to use, to wear things out, to put things into circulation, including things like ideas. I used to think like, oh, this is a good idea. Let me save it. I'm like, no, put it out there now. It's better for creativity to put your ideas out there. And one of the most poignant things that I ever heard was in response to something I wrote was a woman, I was writing about spend out, and a woman said, my mother died recently, and going through her house, we found this beautiful set of china that I had never seen in my whole life. My mother must have always been saving it for some special occasion, and it never happened. And so now I use that china every day. And I thought, that's the thing. You wait and wait, and you may never use that perfume. Those bath salts may get hard and won't work anymore in the bottle. Your fancy truffle oil will spoil. Your white T-shirts will just get yellowed on the shelf, you know. So I remind myself to spend out.
I really like that, and I think the stories that you're sharing about the people that you've interacted with in this book are very poignant. And I wanted to ask you if you were surprised by the reaction to your resolutions and your commandments. And are they resonating with people, or can you give examples of things that aren't resonating with people?
Well, you know, one of the things that really resonated, and again, I wasn't sure if this was just me, was I have written about this thing about how I'm an abstainer. So there's, you can divide the world into two groups, and then there's a lot of people in between in, who are a little bit of both. But the abstainers are people who, if there's a temptation, they do better when they just say, I'm not going to have any at all. I'm just going to take it off my list. I never eat French fries. I never drink beer. I never eat sugar. And they just give it up altogether. And for that, for them, that's easier. And then moderators are people who do better when they have a little bit. Like they can have it from time to time, or they can have five French fries, or they can have it on a special occasion. And they kind of get panicky if you tell them they can never have something. And what I found is that moderators and abstainers are very judgmental, and they will keep telling each other that they're wrong. As an abstainer, people are constantly telling me, you should be able to enjoy a brownie, or you shouldn't be so hard on yourself, or it's not healthy to be so strict, or you're gonna fall off the wagon and just, you know, go crazy with ice cream if you don't let yourself have it from time to time. And maybe the, and I think that's true of moderators, but for an abstainer like me, it's easier to say none. And what I found is that a lot of people, once they learn this vocabulary, they find it much easier to resist temptation because they can say to themselves, well, this is what works for me, or this other strategy works for me. And I recognize that not everybody agrees with me, and that's fine. Because as an abstainer, I don't have to listen to what the moderators are telling me because their strategy works for them. It doesn't work for me. And I think there's a lot of abstainers out there that once they think about abstaining, they're actually discover that it's easier for them. My sister, who I always thought was a moderator and actually was the person I had in mind when I came up with this distinction, just a couple weeks ago said to me, you know what? I'm really an abstainer. It's really just easier for me to just give it up altogether. And so it's just an interesting thing to find out about yourself. And I thought maybe I was the only one who thought this way, who was an abstainer. I thought everybody was a moderator. I thought you ought to be able to indulge in moderation. As I said, I've come to find out that a lot of people identify with these categories, and it really resonates with people who are trying to resist temptations of various sorts.
I like that. One of the things that I really enjoy about your blog are the Wednesday happiness tips. And my favorite of the tips was the instant happiness tips.
Oh, right. Yeah, quick fix.
Instant gratification. So this is for our audience. This is when you need a happiness intervention ASAP. You cannot wait.
Yeah, yeah. 911.
Yeah. So would you mind sharing some of those? I think it would be very helpful for everyone to hear.
Well, one of the quickest, easiest ways to give yourself a lift is to listen to your favorite upbeat music. People really respond to this, and it will just make you feel better right away. Another thing, and this sounds silly, and it is goofy, especially if anybody can see you, but if you just jump up and down a few times, you will get this crazy surge of energy and good cheer. You know, do some jumping jacks, skip around the room, run down the stairs. It's just, it's childlike and goofy, and it just gets your blood going. So that's a fun thing to do. Smell is a wonderful way to give yourself just a quick fix. No money, no calories, no time, no effort, just a beautiful smell. Another thing is almost everybody gets a lift from engaging with another person. This is true for extroverts and introverts alike. Having a little connection, even talking to like a store clerk, will boost your mood. So take a minute to talk to somebody. And if you can, it's better to talk to them face-to-face and just have a little exchange. And a lot of times that will help you shift your mood. Another thing is to just go outside. Being outside in the sunlight, even on the grayest day, there's a lot more light outside than there is inside. And that will give you a lift and a focus. And then the last thing I would say is just to remember, it's very easy when you're in a bad mood or you're in a funk to kind of feel like it's just happening to you. And sometimes that's true. And it would be very, very difficult to consciously shift it. But a lot of times, if you can have the mental awareness, which is challenging, to say, oh, I'm feeling blue, or that comment really, really upset me, and so now I feel sad, or you know whatever's happening to me right now is really bothering me, and I'm feeling anxious, or I'm feeling irritated, or I'm feeling resentful, is to say to yourself, okay, I feel this way. What are the things that I can do to change my mood? Whether I listen to a song, or talk to a friend, or go outside, or watch something silly on television, or cleaning up It turns out that for most people, outer order contributes to inner calm, and sometimes just cleaning off your desk or cleaning off a counter or cleaning out your medicine cabinet, well, I find that it really calms me down. Even just cleaning off the surface of my desk just makes me feel more in control, and just that outer order helps soothe my ruffled feathers. These are things that you can do. And so when you're feeling that kind of blue mood, to say to yourself, okay, what can I do that will help me feel better? You know, I don't have to just experience this. There's things that I can do to make myself feel more cheerful.
I'm so enjoying this conversation, but I think we only have time for one more question. So I think I'll end it with just asking if you have a happiness mantra or if there's one thing you've taken away from your own pursuit that everyone on tonight's call can put into action as soon as they hang up.
Well, you know, I really think that of everything that I've written, the one sentence that seems to resonate most with people is the days are long, but the years are short. And, you know, sometimes just you lie in bed in the morning and you think, oh, my gosh, all the things that have to happen today before I'm back in my bed tonight, you know, it just seems interminable. Or just, you know, getting through lunch seems like a long, long journey. But then you look back and a year passes in a flash. And I think that to appreciate every season of life and to be grateful for what we're experiencing right now is so important for a happy life. And it's so important to just experience the experience of what's happening instead of being so focused, as I tend to do, on my to-do list, on my email, on marching around the apartment and getting all my chores and errands done, that I lose sight of what's happening right now. And I think that that's something that happens to a lot of people. It's really important to keep that in mind.
Well, thank you. And thank you just overall so much for your time and energy tonight, Gretchen. We really do appreciate it. And to our audience, thank you all for participating. And I invite you to join us next month on November 27th when Lauren Berger, who's the intern queen, in partnership with Brazen, will be hosting an online resume review. We will have a more limited number of spots for this event, so keep a lookout for the event announcement so that you can register and get a spot. So we look forward to you joining us again. Thank you again, everybody, and good night.